front of a live studio audience.
Fire up the projectors, turn on your TVs, and adjust your antennas. It's time for the Screen Addicts Podcast with your hosts, Chris, Steven, and Jeremy.
Welcome back to another episode of the Screen Addicts Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Steven.
Oh, hi, Jeremy Sosa.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, and I'm not even going to bother with the nickname this week.
You're that inspired, huh?
I'm that inspired.
Sounds good. Well, if you already can't tell, we are one short a Screen Addict this week, as Chris has been tied up doing busy stuff. He would love to be here as usual, but hopefully we can get him on next week. He was a little tied up this weekend, though, so we're going to have to try our best without our captain, Sway Capitan.
We'll motor through as best we can.
But until he comes back, I am the captain now. Look at me. I am the captain now. I was just thinking that movie.
Captain of what?
I don't know. I was just like thinking of Captain Phillips for some reason, and it just popped in. I should have said something cool like Captain America, because, you know, Captain America is pretty cool now. When we were in high school, man, I was trying to read Captain America comics. Like, he's the lamest superhero of all time. I'm like, okay, you just wait. In 20 years, he's going to be the shit.
He has a shield.
Get this man a shield.
And get this man a shield.
Dude, oh, we're going to have to talk about that for sure.
Oh my God.
Definitely going to add that to headlines. But as per our nicknames, we are inspired this week. Well, some of us are inspired.
I
definitely am. You are. This is going to be a perfect yin-yang type of a scenario here. And we are inspired, or again, I am inspired by The Disaster Artist, the new film coming out with James Franco, as he is playing Tommy Wiseau, the writer, producer, creator, character of the indie film The Room. And we are continuing on with our indie flick fix this week, and our pick, well, again, my pick, and I'm glad that you persevered, and I know Chris was dying to talk about it this week because he actually sat through the whole thing himself, and we were going to talk about The Room. But first, let's go ahead and just talk about what else we've watched this week. So, Jeremy, what have you got this week?
Oh, let's see here. I did my homework. I watched Ingrid Goes West. Oh, my God. It's just stupid. Hashtag this. Emoji that. Why do I want to watch a movie about somebody playing with their damn cell phone? And then you got psycho chick wanting to move into Cube Junior's house. No, stay away from her, Cube. That's not right.
He didn't know, man. He did not know.
And he didn't know, and he never knew. And that's what's sad.
Well, not to mention the fact that you're ultimately tardy on this one. I'm still glad you stuck it out and watched it.
I know. I just felt like hitting play on it, and I'm so disappointed in myself.
It was Elizabeth Olsen, huh? She pulled you in, didn't she?
Yeah.
The Scarlet Witch powers.
Damn right.
Yeah, you know, but you know, as far as all that other stuff goes, it's just kind of funny hearing guys like us talking about, you know, all of the little emoji cons and hashtags.
We sound like the old man, you know. We didn't do this Twitter when we were little.
I mean, yes, we use Twitter and we use those stupid little emojis, but do we really want to watch a movie about someone doing that exact same thing on their cell phone? For pretty much the entire movie.
Fair enough. So what else you got?
Oh, I also caught up on a movie that came out this summer. Catherine Bigelow directed Detroit.
Mm.
Based on the factual events that happened in 1967 during Detroit's race riots. And it's a really, really, really good movie. it deserves some Oscar attention, but since it came out in August, and there's going to be a lot of good movies coming out in the next few weeks, so I really don't, it might just get overlooked, so I don't know. But I also, one of the, I watched the season premiere of S.H.I.E.L.D. this last week.
Oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yeah. they're going all out this season. They're in space.
Oh, shit. So they're going to get a run into the Guardians of the Galaxy or something?
I don't know. But yeah, they're on a spaceship.
Freaking Star-Lord's going to carjack Lola. Man, I'm still behind a whole half. I guess the last thing that I remember is when John Hannah from The Mummy and Spartacus had built that, the artificial intelligent May and that other robot. And I think that's about where I stopped watching. Not necessarily out of disinterest or anything. I just stopped. I don't know. I bet you if I picked it back up, I'd probably get back into it.
Yeah, that drug on for a little bit because all the actual characters were plugged into that Matrix type framework thing, and the androids were taking over.
So how was the premiere? Was it good?
It was pretty cool. Yeah, those blue Kree people are back and everything, so it's going to be an interesting first part of the season anyway.
Is there any tie-in to the Inhumans? I mean, when is that even supposed to come out? Like, I thought it was supposed to come out a long time ago.
I don't know. They have one Inhuman, Daisy.
Mm-hmm. Boy, ABC is very apprehensive about pulling the trigger on that Inhumans. I don't know. Maybe it just really isn't as good as they say it is, and they're kind of afraid to put it out there, but I don't know.
Hell, Disney and Marvel prints money. They may as well. If they swing and miss, they swing and miss. It's just one.
Yeah, and they hit the mark so many times that they're afforded a couple of missteps here and there.
Oh, yeah, like Thor the Dark World.
You know, I didn't dislike Thor the Dark World, but then you watch something like Ragnarok, and you're like, yeah. Oh, so that's how that's supposed to be.
Yeah, Thor is an entertaining character.
Yeah. Yeah, he can be. I think the shorter his hair gets, the more personality he shows.
Did you hear he credited Kevin Smith for taking Thor in a new direction?
Kevin Smith?
Chris Hemsworth was saying on a podcast, he was listening to one of Kevin Smith's podcasts, and Kevin was railing on how boring Thor was, and Thor needs to do this and that. So Chris Hemsworth went to Takiti or whatever, the director, and he was all on board with cutting Thor's hair and destroying the hammer and doing all this stuff.
I don't think it's kind of like a backhanded I told you so. Still, though, whatever worked, whatever inspired it, it worked definitely.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
Oh, that's about it I got for this week.
Dude, I watched so many things. When I was a little kid, my mom would take me to the library, and I would get four movies at a time for free, and watch them, take them back, get four more. And for some odd reason, I just kind of got hit by that bug again of going to the library and renting free movies. And dude, that's exactly what I did. I rented a whole bunch of random stuff, like Basic Instinct, Cutthroat Island, Goodbye Mr. Chips. I watched all of the original Planet of the Apes movies, 1 through 5, and dude, those are really good. You kind of have to go back into the 70s as best as you can. I know we were born in the 80s, but you kind of have to place yourself at the time with the effects and this and that. But man, I was really into them, and they're not very long, so they were kind of easy watches. But I also watched The Foreigner with Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan. Did you see that by any chance?
I started it and I never finished it.
Yeah, it's good. It's definitely a slow-paced movie. It's not full-on action. The action that they do show is really well done and choreographed very well, but it is a slow-paced film. Nice little espionage type of a thriller. And Jackie Chan, man, I don't know how much of the stunts he's still doing these days, but he did a great job. And this is kind of one of those movies where it demanded kind of a heavy performance from the guy who, I know to American audiences, we're not really used to seeing that. And because, you know, he's kind of funny, fun, Charlie Chaplin kicking ass, Jackie Chan, and, you know, all the Rush Hour movies and stuff like that. But in this one, his daughter dies, so he goes out and looks for all of the IRA bombers responsible for it, and kind of goes toe-to-toe with Pierce Brosnan, who's a corrupt government official, and just, it was really well done. But I also tried to finish the Crisis on Earth X crossover series, and I guess you got through what, just Flash, maybe?
I just watched the Flash episode, and that one was part 3 of it, so.
Okay, so I mean, it's weird. You kind of have to watch all 4 of them, because it's all 4 one collective episode, basically. And but if you don't, it's not like it's going to have any kind of impact on whatever series you're watching. Because you'll watch The Flash this week, and it probably won't be any.
I already did, and it's really good.
But it has no resonancy from
we're back to the Thinker this week.
So it's just all, oh, look, it's our little Avengers for TV section of our seasons. And
yeah, if you wanted to take a week off or a week break from The Flash, that was the week to do it.
Right. So, I mean, it's still kind of fun to see that, but then again, it's like 4 episodes. Man, that's a long time. But
yeah, and especially for people that watch all those series, damn, that's a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I watch all 4 of them myself, so it's kind of like I'm not really throwing myself way out of the rotation of any of them, because I'm all caught up on Legends and Arrow, so, and there was nothing led into this. It just happened for all 4 episodes. It was just really bizarre, because at least last time they did this, they kind of built up to it within the season. But this time they just did it, and it was fine, I guess. I mean, I guess the only thing that lynches it together is Iris and Barry's wedding, and it kind of built to that, but it didn't even really happen. So I don't know. It's just kind of weird. But I did start a new television series. Along with my other movies that I rented from the library, I picked up season 1 of Chuck. And do you remember Chuck, by any chance?
I remember. I think I watched an episode here and there, but it's a network TV show. I don't dig those.
But, man, it is so funny. I loved it. I'm already done with the first season, and I've already reserved season 2 from the library. I just got to go pick it up. But, man, it is so funny, and I love it. And Chris, this is when I need Chris here to support me, because it's from the creators of The OC and Gossip Girl.
Oh,
so he would definitely
of course.
He would definitely be in my pocket with this. But the action sequences are really well done, and it's really funny. And Zachary Levi, who plays Chuck, is just such a charismatic character. He's so funny, and he's not annoying. He's not one of those geeks that you're just like, oh my god, I want to punch him in the face. You kind of like root him on and stuff. And Yvonne Strahovski, who was in Dexter, she's probably the ugliest woman I've ever seen in my life. And you know, I'm sorry, reverse that. But she's really well done in the film, in the show too. And it's really funny. I don't know. I burned through season 1. There's only 5 seasons of it, so it kind of gives me a little break from my Party of 5 and X-Files binging that I'm trying to undertake here. But other than that, you know, I guess that's kind of all that I had this week. Aside from our little venture, you know what? I think that'll segue into our main topic this week, which also inspired by The Disaster Artist, were we to see The Room, but we were also inspired by the concept of The Disaster Artist being a movie being made about another movie. And it kind of sparked this idea that, what are some other movies that show characters making movies? And that whole concept. So that's going to be the main topic for this week. But before we do all that, I'm going to just knock some headlines out of the way because, man, there's quite a bit to talk about here.
Yeah.
So on with the headlines. So our first headline, let's just get this out of the way. The Infinity War trailer. The Avengers Infinity War trailer dropped.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
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 So I'm watching it, and I'm just kind of getting pissed off. But it's not that hard, man. That's exactly all you need to do.
That's how it's done.
And although I was kind of delighted to see Thanos looking like a big purple thumb.
I don't get it. Why didn't they put his damn helmet on him?
You know what's funny is that every single time that you've seen Thanos in any of these post-credit sequences, he's got his helmet on. So yeah. Why did they just completely take it off? It did no favors for how
you know,
he looked.
I can tell you why right now. Josh Brolin.
What, he wanted to...
No, the studio was like, we hired Josh Brolin, so we got to kind of make Thanos look like Josh Brolin.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it just doesn't make... Because it doesn't really... I can hear his voice, but it does look kind of like him, I guess. I mean, it's not like when you see him as Cable. Like, you could see Josh Brolin in Cable.
Yeah.
I don't see too much of Josh Brolin in Thanos. It's kind of like seeing Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. I don't really see too much of him... as of the Hulk, but I don't know, the CGI on that was just a little off, and surprisingly so, that I thought that they would handle Thanos of all things with tender loving care, you know, but...
Because I'm sure Josh Brolin's wearing a motion capture suit for that Thanos character, so...
Yeah, I don't know, but all that aside, I mean, it just looks so cool, it's gonna be fun... It's tying in all these characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And this is kind of what I was talking about with the Justice League. You know, it's like this is a culmination of 10 years worth of films.
Yeah,
10 years worth of character development. 10 years worth of storylines progressing towards this one ultimate entry into their series. And with the addition of even more characters like the Guardians of the Galaxy showing up at the end of the trailer. It was just so good. And... I don't know, man. They're already printing money. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah. And what's funny is I read something that the Guardians and Thor may not even show up on Earth in this Avengers movie.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking that something like that the Guardians were going to show up in probably the last 5 or 10 minutes of the movie anyway, you know, to kind of... lead into part two, because this is a two-part film, and it's also the, I think...
Maybe. They're not titling Avengers 4 yet, so who knows?
Well, I don't know. I thought they were splitting it up. This one's going to be 2018, and then part two's going to be 2019.
Feige said Avengers 4 is the complete reset.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realize that.
This Infinity War movie is apparently the end of the entire Marvel universe as we know it right now.
Wow. And you know, that was inevitable too, because all these characters, all the actors and actresses are getting older. And
yeah. All the contracts are expiring.
Ending. And man, you know, some of those people are like, I will re-sign today. I don't want to go. But I think if you had to make who do you think is going to die? I guarantee you, Steve Rogers, he has to die in this. He has to die. As
Cap,
much as I hate to say that.
Oh, Cap, yeah. He's got to go. Let's see here. Thor.
Looks like Vision's getting his stone pulled out of his dome.
Vision's done. Vision's history. Poor Vision.
Yeah. And he turned into Paul Bettany. It was really weird.
I know. He can become Paul Bettany. And then when he becomes Vision again, Thanos shows up.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, but...
Yeah. Okay. There's just going to be a lot of them that die. I don't think Tony Stark's going to die. I don't think they're going to kill RDJ.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I know there's a new Iron Woman, I guess, but I think she inherits the technology. I don't think she necessarily redevelops anything. So I bet that's what they'll do. So yeah, Infinity War. I already give that trailer a thumbs up, so it's pretty exciting.
I know what Chris will give it.
No, Chris is Chris. He won't say he's excited to see that, but I know he won't. Well, I don't know. He probably would trash on it.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Cap with a beard is just weird to me, though. I thought that was kind of funny.
Hey, bearded Cap. It was like bearded Bruce Wayne. So whatever. Yeah.
Bearded Dexter Morgan.
Yeah. It's like we see the beard and then they turn into lumberjacks.
Right. Well, all right. So if you haven't checked out the new Infinity War trailer, it is already the number one rated, what did they say, movie trailer? The fastest to 100 million views?
It's the most viewed trailer ever on YouTube.
DC's over there sitting like, son of a bitch!
And they're sitting there like, no wonder why we didn't let this trailer on the Justice League.
Yeah. I mean, they had Deadpool, but I guess they thought he won't do too much damage, but I don't know. But speaking of Fox and Deadpool and Marvel, Disney seems to be in the running again to acquire, and from what I've read that they're not acquiring the rights of Fox altogether, but I heard what they're going to try and do is somewhat similar to what Sony's doing with Marvel, where they're not relinquishing too much of the financial aspect of the characters, but they're relinquishing some more of the creative aspects. So I think Marvel is dying to make an X-Men movie from their perspective. And I'm kind of okay with that. I don't think Deadpool will be anywhere near it if Fox even allows them to use Deadpool, which they shouldn't. I kind of agree with you.
But Disney wants to buy the movies side of Fox, the TV side of Fox. Pretty much all Fox wants to keep is Fox News and a couple other little things.
And some sports channels, too.
Yeah, and Fox Sports and Fox News. I think those are the two big ones they want to keep. Everything else, they're going to give to Disney.
I mean, it would be kind of cool. Well, now that Wolverine's done, Hugh Jackman won't even get to play with all these characters, which kind of sucks. They'll probably recast Wolverine like they did with Tom Holland as Spider-Man and have their own vision of what Wolverine would be, but that's kind of a bummer.
And now we know for sure there's only going to be two good Deadpool movies.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think that they won't. Well, I don't know. It's kind of a weird. I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. I know it kind of bugs you because that's your pride and joy, but I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Ryan Reynolds sent out a tweet today. He's already, apparently he's on board with Fox, the Fox Disney deal, but I guess he has to be because he is Deadpool. So.
Right. He doesn't want to burn any bridges before they even construct anything. I'll tell you who won't be going over is Bryan Singer, because apparently not only was he fired from being a director of Bohemian Rhapsody, he was also, his entire production company, Bad Hat Harry, was completely removed from any of the facilities that it was acquiring in Fox Studios. I don't know who he pissed off or what he did, but man, is he completely on the outs. He's already completely out of the running of doing any. Well, I guess he wasn't going to do the new X-Men movie, but
no.
He, I mean, I don't know what kind of damage he's done, but he's really screwed himself up over there. So there's no way Disney will go to him for any kind of advice about the X-Men movies, that's for sure. But, speaking of things moving on without certain individuals, Netflix has announced that House of Cards will no longer or be airing with Kevin Spacey, and which poses an interesting question. I haven't seen any of the episodes yet, but I'm under the impression that Kevin Spacey as Frank Underwood is the central linchpin main character villain backbone of this particular series. So
yeah,
I mean, I respect the fact that they want to continue going on and continue to employ all those individuals who work hard on the program.
Oh yeah.
But from a storyline perspective, that's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah, they should just kill him off.
Yeah, and I guess that Robin Wright, she's going to be taking front and center, and which is what a lot of people have wanted anyway. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see how that happens. And another bit of interesting news that I read is that J.J. Abrams and Quentin Tarantino are going to be teaming up, allegedly, to make Star Trek IV. And in what capacity that will be, I'm not really sure. I actually kind of see Tarantino co-writing or writing a script for Star Trek. I don't really see him as director. It's kind of like a From Dusk Till Dawn scenario. You know how he co-wrote that with Robert Rodriguez, and Robert Rodriguez directed it. I kind of see him doing something of that nature. I just don't really see Tarantino directing a Star Trek movie, but...
No. And I don't really... I guess he could put the reins on himself and censor himself for a bullshit PG-13 rating, but I know he wouldn't want to.
Yeah, but I guess if he's, you know, if there's some kind of understanding that he will be affiliated with a Star Trek film, that he will definitely have to, you know, I know we were making some jokes about it, some more foul jokes, but that I definitely won't be repeating at this moment, but you know, it's just kind of, it's interesting to see how that takes place. I mean, because he's a genre fan. He loves sci-fi and blaxploitation and westerns and just all these, you know, all these genres of film. And I don't know, it'll be kind of interesting. But another interesting headline was that John Oliver had called out Dustin Hoffman on a press tour for Wag the Dog. And I bring this up because of the existing climate, political climate, with all these alleged assaults and stuff. And Wag the Dog happens to be a movie about making a movie. So I thought, wow, that's kind of perfect for this week. And apparently John Oliver was hosting an event where De Niro and Dustin Hoffman were going to be showing Wag the Dog as part of a 20th year anniversary of the film's release, and they were discussing it, and then Oliver just went in after him. He's like, so what do you think of the woman accusing you of rape? And turned into this 6-minute argument filled with cringeworthy awkwardness that it's just hard to watch, but I don't know, I just thought that was kind of funny. But you know, and speaking of things that are difficult to watch, that brings me to our newest segment, the Indie Flick Fix. Oh, and for this week, we have watched The Room, the 2003 Tommy Wiseau directed, starring, written, produced, photographed, music by, photographed, everything you could possibly think of. This guy did it for this film. And this movie is notoriously one of the worst films ever made. Yeah, rightfully so.
It is.
And, so basically the plot here is about this guy, Johnny, who has been seeing his girl.
Wait a minute. There's a plot?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think if you skim through the slime, you can actually see it. But apparently it's about this guy named Johnny who has been seeing his girlfriend Lisa for a couple of years, and they're engaged to be married. And then Lisa starts having an affair with Johnny's best friend, Mark. And it's just so bad. I don't know. I kind of attribute to watching it as watching something like Troll 2. It's just train wreck TV. You want to watch to see how bad it is. And this is definitely a movie that I wish I could have seen with you and Chris together, just so we could kind of laugh at just how bad things are with this thing.
I mean, the acting is awful. You didn't notice that in the first 30 seconds?
Oh, dude, you notice it. Like, the opening logo of Wiseau Productions looks just so bad. It's just like old Windows you know, like Windows 94 software CGI.
Oh my God.
It's just, I don't even know what it is. It's like a little white globe with his name under it. And so, yeah, from the opening credits, you know you're in for just sheer joy. And I don't really know, but this movie has sparked a cult following that even myself, I was in college the first time I saw this. It was in 2005. So when I was living in Dallas, I was in film school and this and that, and you know, a couple of friends of mine had heard about this movie, and a theater in Dallas, the Inwood, had carried it. They said, "Hey, they're playing The Room. It's supposed to be one of the worst movies ever made," and people are saying it's so bad, it's hilarious. So naturally, a group of us went and saw it, and I was just like, "God, this movie, man, is just." It's kind of like what your mentality of it is. You're watching it and you're thinking, what is going on? Why you try to make sense of something that just doesn't make sense? It's almost like a puzzle or like a riddle you can't solve, and it's makes it even more frustrating because at cons that where they show the movie or viewings of the movie, Tommy Wiseau's there throwing a football around with people, and, yeah. And they asked him, they're like, "What is The Room? What is it?" He's like, "The Room is a movie. You know, I called it The Room because it's where you love, it's where you lie, it's where you do this, but that's why." And they're like,
"What?
Okay. Thank you for that brilliant explanation." And all right, Jerry. So what were some of your more memorable moments while watching this? What are some scenes that stood out to you?
Okay. This is something that just I noticed it. Okay. You 30 minutes into the movie, you got supposedly three sex scenes. Cuz this is pretty much a softcore porn for the first half of the movie. But did you notice the very first sex scene and the third sex scene are identical? They copied and pasted.
Oh, yeah. And he's like...
And they do it a lot throughout the entire movie.
And you got that cheesy 90s R&B stock song playing. It's like, "I will." I mean, I don't even know. And he's like so high up on her that anatomically. It's
like, he's humping her chest.
Yeah, he's like. I don't even know, like, and that's in the trailer for The Disaster Artist, too. That's so funny, where Seth Rogen's playing the cinematographer, and he's like, "Why is he so high up? What is he doing, her stomach?" It's just so ridiculous.
It's stupid!
Johnny, you could go a whole episode of just Johnny, and, I mean, but it's just, it's crazy how... Just every single character that shows up in this movie are so memorable for being so bad. You know, Lisa, his girlfriend, is just the worst person you will ever know. I mean, she's just the most vile, disgusting human being you will ever see. All these guys are in love with her. She's disgusting. And
she's
Mark.
Just a big old hoe bag, but she's hot.
Oh, come on, man. Are you kidding? No, no way. But Mark, who's supposedly his best friend, who feels bad about what he's doing with
her.
And then, like, all of a sudden at his birthday party, he just, like, flips a 180, and he's like, "No, forget you, Johnny. I hate you." And he's like, what? It's so much for loyalty here. Well, I mean, he wasn't really being a loyal friend anyway, but... And then what about Denny, the little kid... Yeah, I don't even know if he's a kid.
Yeah, is he a little boy?
Is he supposed to be a boy? He looks like a man that just happens to be small. I don't even really know.
From what I was reading about it, it said that, Tommy or Johnny or whatever, it was like the caretaker of that kid for some reason. I don't know.
And
no one knows.
Yeah, it was just really weird. And he goes in there, and they're all trying to have a moment when Johnny and Lisa are in bed, and then he, like, jumps in the bed with them.
I know.
And they're just tickling him, and he's just like, hey, can I watch? Like, no, you freak. Get the hell out of here.
I was like, does he want to watch them have sex? Oh, my God.
I think so. I mean, it's just, that's the stuff about this movie that just, it's so awkward. And it's like, Tommy Wiseau has no idea about just social interaction or something, because when he's just randomly throwing the football around with everybody, it's just, I don't know, man, it's just crazy, and it's just so bad. But I laugh so much watching it. I just laugh at how ridiculous it is. With U-Bowl films, man, we can't, I don't really think we laugh. We just kind of cry and hate ourselves afterwards.
See, but at least U-Bowl films have an entertainment factor to them. At least somebody's getting shot in the head or eaten by something. This had nothing. The best part of the movie was the very end when Tommy Wiseau takes his gun, puts it in his mouth, and pulls the trigger. That's the best part of the movie.
And then, I mean, while doing that, it's so, I don't know, just how it's set up. Like, he shoots.
Oh,
one
yeah.
One second later, he's already got, like, a pool of blood around his head.
And he's, like, laying like Jesus on the cross.
I mean, symbolism, I suppose. I don't know. But I'm just glad I didn't have to see his naked ass again. Those dimples were awkward. But, and then there's characters that show up that you never see again, like the drug dealer that's going to shoot Denny, and he just, like, disappears. And then their friend, who apparently has been their really close friend, but doesn't show up until the second half of the movie, and Mark is going to throw him off of the roof because they have an argument. And then he's like, yeah, you're right. We are good friends. Like, yeah, that's probably why you shouldn't kill me.
Well, you do know the production budget for this movie was like $7. So.
Yeah, that seems kind of high priced, but
that's a little more than one of those $5 Taco Bell boxes. So, you know.
Which is still a lot more appetizing than this film.
Yes, it is.
Well, I do appreciate you venturing into the room with me. That is quite the symbol of friendship, my friend.
It's something, all right.
But speaking of the room, like we said, the Disaster Artist is promising to showcase a lot of the crazy things that have happened. And Greg Sestero wrote a book, and it is called The Disaster Artist, which is what the movie is inspired from by the events that took place in his book. And, man, based on that, it's going to be a pretty crazy movie. And which kind of brings us into our topic for the evening, our main topic, if you will.
I just had one thing to say about Disaster Artist.
Sure.
I don't think James Franco is a very good director. And why he's remaking a movie that came out this decade, and he wants to blow about his inspiration as Ed Wood. Okay, Ed Wood operated in the 50s and 60s. That was way before Tim Burton got his hands on it. And James Franco wants to do something that was done just 14 years ago. Really? I drove my car longer than that.
Well, The Disaster Artist isn't really a remake of The Room. It's showcasing, because he's playing Tommy Wiseau. He's not playing Johnny. They're not remaking The Room. What they're doing is they're showing how the film's production got made. And because apparently the production aspect of the film is so much, it's just as crazy as the film itself, because Tommy Wiseau, he's Johnny. I mean, he doesn't know how to turn it off. That's how he is. And apparently he brought that into the so-called creative process of things, and he was a real militant, crazy individual. And, you know, but in the end, it's just a guy trying to make a movie, and I think that's kind of what they're trying to capture here. And I don't know, it'll be, I think it looks great. I think it is, I think it's going to be really well done. But, and James Franco from his direction, I mean, I've only seen what is it, Child of God he did. And that's pretty enjoyable. I thought it was pretty good. It's very graphic, definitely not for a mainstream audience, but I don't know. I think that'll be good. And having his brother Dave as Greg Sestero, I think is pretty good too. So, and I don't know, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, we shall see, I guess.
So what's your, I forgot to ask, what's your final rating of The Room, your final star rating?
I can't even justify a turkey, like a turkey leg.
You're like a raw turkey leg. It hasn't even been basted yet.
Not even cooked. Not even dropped in the deep fryer yet. Just a raw, nasty turkey leg.
It's definitely a turkey, for sure. Although, if I'm looking at it from the best, worst perspective, this bitch is 5 stars.
Oh, no, not even that.
But yeah, it's
U-Bowl films are more entertaining than that crap was.
It's oven roasted, man. It's just, it's so bad, but I don't know. I still love to watch it. It's like, I don't know. It speaks volumes of me, but I do acknowledge the fact that it is a terrible movie. It's not like I'm saying, no, you're not seeing the philosophical perspective of The Room. No, I'm not. It's shit. It's bad. I fully understand. You know, I'm not some kind of whacked out cinephile that can't see, you know, the trees
artistic
beyond the
value of it.
Yeah, there is none. Except for maybe that beautiful green screen skyline when they're on the roof.
I mean, all you got to say is, okay, Tommy Wiseau made that. And Kevin Smith made Tusk.
Oh, man. I can't, like, hate on Tusk all that much, man.
I love Tusk.
I like Tusk.
I love Tusk. I'm just saying, a lot of people hate Tusk. They should watch this shit before they watch Tusk.
Like, this is a bad movie.
Go back and watch Tusk after you watch The Room, and you'll have a new appreciation for Tusk.
Sounds good to me, man. And well, I guess now finally for our final topic of the week, movies about making movies. So, we're going to rattle off our top three of this particular genre. Starting with number three, Jeremy, what is your favorite movie, your third favorite movie about making movies?
Okay, and this is a weird one. It's not completely a movie about making movies, but it's in there. Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds. There is a German actor, and the German film people made a propaganda movie about him and his exploits. And then at the very end, you get the movie that was made on top of that movie. And that's the revenge factor that Tarantino wanted so bad for that movie. So, yeah, Inglourious Basterds is my number three.
I felt kind of bad. I was like, respect the process, man. But then I was like, oh, yeah, that is a good point. So it is kind of the linchpin to the conclusion of that brilliant movie. Uh-huh. I was like, was somebody filming the Bear Juke smashing skulls? Or
that would have been awesome.
Yeah, not bad. All right. Well, my number three is the 2002 Nicolas Cage film Adaptation, where Nicolas Cage plays screenwriter Charlie Kaufman, who obviously wrote the film Adaptation. He was approached in real life, the screenwriter Charlie Kaufman, who's known for writing Being John Malkovich, and won an Oscar for that. And so he was tasked with trying to adapt a film about a book or he was trying to adapt a book, The Orchid Thief by Susan Orlean, and was just having severe writer's block and couldn't think of a way to adapt this particular novel. And then what had happened was he ended up writing a movie about him writing a movie about this particular book. And it just, it's so crazy. And it shows him, you know, running around the Hollywood circles and him trying to make this movie, trying to construct this movie, somewhat like Barton Fink, where, you know, Turturro's trying to write this novel or this screenplay and stuff. And somewhat like that, but just so much more crazier. And, you know, what's her name? Meryl Streep plays Susan Orlean in this crazy twist at the end. And, you know, Charlie Kaufman even wrote in a twin brother that doesn't even exist, but in the movie he does. It's just such a crazy, bizarre movie. And, you know, it was just everything about that whole Spike Jonze, Michelle Gondry era of filmmakers there in the early 2000s. Just good stuff. And, but that's my number three film is Adaptation.
Nice.
All right, Jeremy. So, what's your number two?
Number two. Well, let's go back to 2008. Kevin Smith's Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
Of course.
And what movie did they make? They made a porno.
You know, not a bad movie. It's no. Seth Rogen making another movie.
It's Seth Rogen. It's one of the only movies I like Seth Rogen in. I mean, that
stupid laugh.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, you get some Jason Mewes bent over. Completely naked.
Yeah. I mean, because that's what we've all been dying to see.
I know. And you get it all.
You know, that was... I remember when they were releasing it on, like, the posters and movie tapes. Like, they were just calling it Zach and Miri. Because the studio was terrified of releasing a film with the name porno in the title. So they were like... we're trying to distribute this. We're trying to sell this. There's no way it'll fly off the shelves if it says porno on it. I'm like, I don't know. It might fly off the shelves if it does say porno on it. But I don't know. I just remember all that controversy. And I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was funny.
It was another great script from Kevin Smith.
Very.
When he puts his mind to it, he knows how to write shit.
Just a little bit, huh?
Yeah. And most people would say that he's gone completely off the rails now and doesn't know what the hell he's doing. And yeah, he does.
I think he'll find his way back to what brought him to the dance. I mean,
yeah, Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Yeah, I think every filmmaker, one way or another, has that kind of point in their career where they feel like they don't want to feel complacent. They don't want to seem like they've just been making one particular type of film their entire career. Which, you know, that's cool and all, but if it's good type of film, then keep making it, man. You know, otherwise you won't get to make anymore.
Yeah.
But not bad. My number two pick is actually... somewhat similar to Zach and Miri Make a Porno, kind of, where you have a group of people, ragtag guerrilla group of people, trying to put together a film in the 1999 comedy Bowfinger, starring Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy in dual roles. Yeah, I said it. Eddie Murphy's playing more than one role in a movie.
Surprise, surprise.
He plays Hollywood A-lister Kit Ramsey, who somehow gets unintentionally duped into making a movie that he doesn't know he's in, and Steve Martin plays Bowfinger, a Hollywood mogul, or a wannabe mogul, trying to break into the Hollywood starlight superpowers, and he orchestrates this crew to film this movie around Kit Ramsey and just making him think he's crazy, and it's just, I don't know, I just love that movie. I've always liked that movie, and... who doesn't love Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy? And this is kind of one of those weird movies where Eddie Murphy was kind of on the end of his, you know, big 80s buzz. You know, he's already out of the Nutty Professor. Like, the Nutty Professor was his last massive hit. But this movie, from a quality standpoint, just held up so well. And I don't know. I always loved it. But that's my number two pick.
Nice.
Bowfinger.
Very good.
So I guess that leaves us with our number ones, man. So
I guess so.
I guess well, before I I'll go ahead and do my number one. I'll let you lead off before you do yours, and I also got a couple of honorable mentions here for just in general. And my number one pick is David Mamet's 2000 film State in Maine, starring a whole shitload of actors.
Oh yeah.
Much like his other films, he draws a big ensemble cast of people. In this instance, it was William H. Macy, Alec Baldwin, Sarah Jessica Parker, Julia Stiles, Clark Gregg, who your boy in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And
Coulson.
It's just about a Hollywood production that comes to the small town, because the town has this unique wholesome quality that is required for this wholesome film, although the cast and crew are the worst people that you ever want to meet. And it's just a great, funny movie. And it was Mamet at his prime of work. I'm always a big Mamet fan, whether it's on the stage or just in film. I just love his writing style. And it's just a great movie. Alec Baldwin plays this troubled, womanizing actor who, man, it's kind of scary when you think about it now, but he's, you know, in trouble for harassing Julia Stiles' teenage character. And it's just like, oh my God, this is kind of awkward to watch now. But overall, it's just such a great movie about a group of Hollywood moguls trying to get a movie made in a small town environment of people who don't understand their ways. And it's just a big culture clash. It's just one of my all-time favorite movies about making movies. So that is State in Maine.
Nice.
So, all right, Jeremy, send us off.
All right, number one, 1994, the Tim Burton classic, Ed Wood.
Oh, yeah.
And this goes back to my original argument about many years apart. This is pretty much the movie by a little mini biography of Ed Wood. Johnny Depp plays Ed Wood. Martin Landau won his Oscar for Bela Lugosi. Sarah Jessica Parker, Patricia Arquette, and a whole shitload of other people. And yeah, it just chronicles Ed Wood trying to get his movies made any way he could, however he could, trying to, or getting poor Bella to have an octopus go just, without a motor.
Just roll around in it. Make it look like it's killing you.
Yeah, make it look like it's killing you.
What is it that that Bunsen burner or that electrical torch? He's like, I'm not going anywhere near that goddamn thing. Man, he stole that movie from everyone. Like, oh, nobody had a chance.
No.
And he was just so good. Martin Landau was so good in that role.
Not even Johnny Depp had a chance.
No, man. He buried them all. I mean, he's just so good in that role. Oh, my God. I love Ed Wood. I had to let you end it with Ed Wood, because it's just, it's the perfect example of these types of movies, you know?
And, oh, yeah.
And Tim Burton is just the best director, because not only with the concept of it, but just the structure and how it was done. And I mean, overall, like, who's gonna make a movie about bad sci-fi movies but Tim Burton? You know, he just
exactly,
he gets it.
And he loved Ed Wood anyway, so he might as well. And
so good.
And that's another thing. Tim Burton's a great director. James Franco is just, he's James Franco.
Man, why all the hate on Franco?
I don't like Franco.
Yeah.
It's kind of like him and Rogan. Since Zack and Mary's really the only Rogan movie I like.
Yeah.
Sausage Party was kind of funny, but not really.
See, I go back to the Freaks and Geeks days, man. I've been kind of with these guys for a long time now, so it's kind of, you know,
yet another network TV show I never cared about.
Man, it's so good. Oh, it's so good. And I guess in some regard, Undeclared, but I don't think, yeah, Franco wasn't in that one, but man, just good stuff. But so Ed Wood, huh? bad.
Eddie.
I guess I have to show some due diligence here and list a couple of other movies that didn't quite make our list, but are perfect candidates for this type of topic. And that would be Tropic Thunder, The Player, Get Shorty, Shadow of a Vampire, Be Kind Rewind, which, oh man, I don't know how I didn't put that on my list. Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. Entourage is kind of an entire series of this type of thing. I didn't know how to mix in a television series. I damn sure wasn't going to put that movie in there because that movie was disappointing as well.
Stay away from the Entourage movie.
And I guess this would be Chris's pick if he was attending this week, is Boogie Nights. Speaking of making pornos.
There you go. That's the ultimate movie about making movies.
Yeah. And I mean, that is a good movie, though. P.T. Anderson, baby.
Yeah, and you get a witness on Mark Wahlberg in his
greatest.
That was
greatest. Your favorite part, wasn't it? The Diggler.
The Diggler.
On that note, I'm going to end this episode of the Screen Addicts podcast. Thank you all the listeners for listening. You can follow us on all of the wonderful social media websites that Jeremy bashed while watching Ingrid Goes West.
I know.
We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I guess we never made it to Snapchat, but maybe one day we will. And just do a search for Screen Addicts or Screen Addicts Podcast. On Twitter, it's at @screen_addicts, @ADDICS. And as far as Instagram, I'm not really sure the handle. That's really shitty of me. But, you know, I don't do Instagram. I don't.
Me either.
I probably should. Everybody else seems to, but I don't know. I'm quite reserved in that fashion, I guess. But in any event, well, thank you all for listening. And if you can, do yourself a favor and check in to the room.
Yeah.
Or not. All right. Well, adios, amigos.
Have a good evening.
Thank you for listening to the Screen Addicts Podcast. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,